the tide.
Ian knew everyone. When we're first getting to know each other, we were living in opposite blocks of flats. We'd see each other from time to time. More often than not, we'd meet at a night out. But it was a surprise when we first saw each other. We saw that we lived so close. When he invited me back to his, I was first surprised by the fact that he said hello to everyone. Everyone we passed in the corridor. I'd lived in that building for 2 years. I didn't know any of my neighbours. We'd see each other, I'd recognise them, but I'd never said a word to them. Ian was dramatic. He was able to bring everyone in the room into his world. And when he did something big, it just worked. He had plans, saw them vividly. And then they happened. It was the first time I cooked for him at my place. We'd planned it for a week. I spent all day worrying about what I was going to cook and whether it was going to go right, and he breezed in like he hadn't thought about it even happening tonight. I apologised that my kitchen dining room light was on the blink, and he told me to turn it off. There we sat, in the dark, by the window, overlooking his block of flats. And as we looked out, one by one, every window facing mine lit up with a candle. Ian had been around every flat on that side. I thought maybe coming here would be my dramatic gesture, but it's not going quite as well as it would if he did it.
The sun glimmers through a grey sky over the ocean and into your window. You blink awake on top of the sheets, still damp. You don't remember exactly when you fell asleep for the second time. But to alleviate any doubt that might be in your mind, you are keenly aware which parts of last night were your dream and which parts were real. Your door is just slightly ajar, just off of its latch. Closed still, but you remember leaving last night, going downstairs, and you must have come back up and found a way to get back to sleep. Despite that, you don't feel well rested. You feel sore and cold, but it is morning. The radio clock tells you it's about 8:20, 10 minutes before your scheduled wake-up call. What do you do?
Well, I take a shower, try and make myself presentable. I don't suppose I'm doing very well endearing myself to the people in this town, but if I'm gonna ruffle some feathers, then I'm gonna look good doing it.
Would you like to try and clear that afraid complication that you got last night?
Yeah.
You're in a moment of respite, and this is a good opportunity to make a recovery test and try and get rid of that.
How do I do one of those?
It's very simple. It's like any other test, really. I'm going to start by setting the difficulty. It's 2d8 plus the complication. So in this case, it's 2d8 and 1d6.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty doable. That's a 9.
Well, that sounds like it's a courage roll for in attributes.
Yes.
Perhaps a focus for skills.
Yeah, try and get your mind back in order.
And after that memory, I'll add a d8 for being a sucker for the dramatic.
Yes, looks good to me.
Sure. So, I beat it. And also I have a hitch. So I have a d4 effect die.
Okay, so a D4 effect die is lower than you're afraid, but that's okay. It's not too bad. It means that instead of clearing it completely, you just step it down.
Okay.
So you become afraid D4.
Slightly better than it was.
Yeah, significantly better, I think. And you did get a hitch. You are trying to clear something. It would be mean to just give you a plot point and put that back up to 6.
I mean, I would have gotten something out of it.
So I'm not going to do that, but I am going to spend a plot point and step up your other complication.
I hate that.
Yeah. The police suspicion.
So the previous one would be mean, but this...
This is perfectly normal.
Okay.
Police suspicion is going to go up to D12. What do you do? After you've showered, cleaned, you've dressed...
Taking a few deep breaths?
Yes.
I'm going to head downstairs and let Grace know that I won't be needing that wake-up call.
She is there at her desk bright and early. She greets you with a smile, and she says, "Did you sleep well?"
A little unrest, but that's normal for a new bed, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was everything all right with the room?
Yes, fine. Thank you very much. You still serving breakfast?
Yes, just through there. Tony will be serving it. Go and tell him what you'd like.
Thank you.
You head through into the dining room, which only has a couple of residents, including the man that you saw frowning at his crossword yesterday, and a younger woman, probably even younger than you. They're both at separate tables. And then there, behind a sort of large counter, there is a large man. You presume to be Tony, who fixes you with a stare. As you come through the door. All right.
You must be Tony.
He nods. Breakfast?
Yeah, if you please.
He nods and turns his back on you and goes to make some breakfast. He doesn't ask what you want.
Guess I'll sit down.
Yeah. A few minutes later, a full English comes your way. It looks kind of... I think the word I want is monochrome?
Beige.
Beige. Beige would be the chrome that it is mono. there are baked beans. There are hash browns. There are egg? Question mark. A couple of sausages and half a slice of black pudding.
That's not too bad, I suppose. I don't say that.
No, I was going to say you don't say that to
that's
Tony.
That's my inner monologue. I've had worse, and I go and I sit down if I can.
Yes, absolutely. But, it's about a dozen tables in here.
Next to a table away from the fellow with the newspaper.
Yeah.
If he's got another one.
You eat and consider your options for the day, limited as they are, in terms of what you're going to do next. Possibly considering whether it's time to leave Kingstide or if there's more still here. At the very least, you've been led to understand that Ian is probably buried here at the graveyard.
That's going to be my first stop. Slightly easier to walk around a graveyard in the day, but apprehensive on the rest.
You hear the bell of the door go, and you can't quite see from the angle. You're sort of in the corner of the room, but you hear two men walk through and begin to talk to Grace. Their voices are kind of low. It's only about a minute later that two police officers walk through into the dining room.
Are they ones I recognise?
They are different police officers, but they are wearing the same uniform of the county. They look around and their eyes settle on you.
Nod to them.
They come over.
A little gesture towards the chairs.
They remain standing, one on kind of either side of you. The young girl and the older man, as well as Tony, are all looking at you.
As well they might.
And of the two police officers in front of you, one says, "Mr. Cauldron?"
That's me.
The other says, "Mr. Russell Cauldron?"
That's still me.
They look at each other and nod. And one of them says, "Mr. Cauldron, my name is Inspector Avery. This is Sergeant Little. We're here to place you under arrest."
Under what charges?
On the suspicion of the murder of Ian Atkinson. There's a gasp from somewhere in the room under someone's breath, but given that there's no crowd to speak of, an uncomfortable silence settles over the room.
Do I know who is gasping?
You're not really looking at anyone at the moment, so it's hard to say for sure.
That's impossible. I've just got into town.
Perhaps we could talk about this more at the station.
All right, well, if I'm under arrest, then I'm under arrest.
Avery nods and Little, the other one, says, Russell Cauldron, you are under arrest for the suspicion of murder of Ian Atkinson. You don't have to say anything, but it may...
Can we do this on the way?
And you are escorted, leaving a quarter-eaten breakfast behind you.
I'll grab a slice of toast on the way past.
Inspector Avery looks at you disapprovingly, but doesn't say anything as they haul you into the police car waiting outside. And you are driven the fairly short distance from the B&B to the police station. As you're being driven, you look out the window at the seafront, the waves, the sky now cleared, mostly. A couple of stray clouds here and there. Faces whip by, looking in interest. Police car, probably a fairly unusual sight in Kingstide, given its size. And as you're being driven through, you spot a figure just outside the police station, but at a bit of a distance, leaning against the railing that would take you down to the beach and then to the sea. You don't know this figure, but they stand out because they are... Well, he is lanky and almost completely covered. He wears a long coat and a hat that obscures most of his facial features except for a greying beard. He's very still and he carries in his hand a black umbrella.
I'll crane my neck to see if I can see any more.
The police officers that are with you gently nudge you towards the door, blocking your view on either side. And you don't see the figure again.
What are you hoping to get out of this? There's absolutely no way that I did this. I found out that Ian was dead yesterday.
Listen, we'll get you into the interrogation room. We'll have a little discussion about it and see where we go from there. Okay, Mr. Cauldron?
I'm literally under arrest. I can't say no.
They nod. And you're brought into an interrogation room. It's actually just a bit like an office. There is no cool one-way mirror. You imagine that the camera in the corner does the same job. The walls are not like bare stone with a single lamp swinging from them. They're ordinary office lights, wooden desk in the middle, blue and cream painted walls. They sit you down on one side of the table. They place a recorder between the two of you, and one of them turns it on, and the inspector says, interrogation session of Russell Cauldron. Police officers present, Inspector Jack Avery and Sergeant Mike Little. August 20th, 1998. 9:16 a.m. Mr. Cauldron, are you a resident of Kingstide?
I'm not. This is my first visit here.
Are you aware why you've been brought in today?
Only what I've been told.
Would you be able to repeat that for the benefit of this recording?
I would.
They frown almost in unison. Mr. Cauldron, you have before we began the session, you have indicated that... you are not responsible for the crime that we are discussing today. The murder of one Ian Atkinson?
Yes.
Are you familiar with the victim?
I knew him.
What was your relationship to the victim?
We were close friends.
Had you visited him in Kingstide before?
I found out that he was living here last month.
And how did you find that out?
Postcard.
He sent you a postcard?
No, friend. Mutual friend. We'd lost contact, so without any a phone number, I decided to drop by while I had the chance.
Why had you lost contact with Mr. Atkinson?
He moved away.
And Where had he moved away from?
Manchester.
Where you still reside?
I do.
Mr. Caudron, why did Mr. Atkinson come to Kingstide?
I was hoping you could tell me.
Sergeant Little, who so far has remained silent, there's like a very brief, like, snort that could almost be a chuckle. And the inspector says, yes, that's not how this is going to work, Mr. Caudron.
Well, you can't get blood from a stone. I don't have any information for you. We're looking for the same thing. Clearly, if you're still looking for someone who killed Ian Atkinson, I don't see why I'm under suspicion when I've just arrived and I want the same answers as you do.
I would like a dice roll.
Okay.
Because you've got a police suspicion there.
Yep.
And this is essentially a recovery test on that.
Mm-hmm. But that's a big, big thing to step down.
It's a big ask, certainly. Mm-hmm. But let's see what we can do. So I'm going to be rolling 2d8 as standard, plus your complication, which is a d12.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I'm going to be including the wits of the inspector here.
Okay.
Which is a d10.
That's a lot of wits for a person making spurious allegations.
So I think you're looking at a 12 there.
All right. It's doable.
Worth noting, you have a d4 complication afraid. Now, I haven't added that to my dice pool, even though it is working against you. And the reason for that is when a complication gets as low as a d4, instead of me adding it, you're going to add it to your own pool.
Okay.
And that's because more often than not,
d4s,
they're not going to go well for you.
Yeah.
The good news is, as soon as you do that, you get paid a plot point, and after this roll, afraid is gone.
Okay.
It's like a temporary issue that is just dealt with.
All right.
So take a d4.
Take a d4. This is a perfect stranger. I'm going to go with wits as well. Hopefully.
Wits against wits.
Yep. I'd like to pitch that I could add my training in history here, in that, deduction and making sure that the timeline of me arriving doesn't align. Historians have to use conflicting sources constantly.
Absolutely. Take a d6. And then you need a skill.
Focus, maybe? Or rapport?
I think it's probably rapport.
All right. That's another d6. Okay, I've rolled a hitch.
Delicious.
And I've got a 12. However,
you are sitting on a few plot points there.
Got four delicious plot points lined up, which means that what I can do is use a 5 and a 6, and then use plot point to add my 4 on the d4, which gives me 15.
Yes.
And a d10 effect dice.
Very nice. 15 is a success. It is not quite a heroic success, but a couple of things happen. You can get rid of afraid, but I am going to activate that hitch that you've pulled up, so you can take that plot point right back again, and let's put a new complication onto this scene. I'm going to give you hungry d6.
So I've lost, so I'm stepping down police suspicion to d10.
That's right, because your effect die was not larger than the d12 that it currently is. You can't clear it altogether, but you can step it down. It goes down to d10.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you get hungry d6.
Great.
As a consequence, I'm going to say that the two officers leave the room for a little bit. They leave you alone and confer privately before Sergeant Little comes back. And he says, "All right, Mr. Caudron, I want you to do something for me. I want you to see this from our perspective. You are a stranger to us, and to, I presume, everyone. You don't know anyone here in town."
"No, I've met a few people, but no.
And last night, if I am understanding this correctly, and you can tell me if I'm not, you came into this police station and you spoke with one of my colleagues, Constable Gordon, about this issue. You were demanding information."
"I was looking, I was asking for information that you clearly also lack."
"And Constable Gordon suggested that you seemed quite agitated, as did his sergeant in charge that night."
"I had recently found out that my friend was dead. Can you understand that, Sergeant Little?"
He looks down at his feet. "Of course, absolutely. That doesn't necessarily excuse antisocial behaviour, but I understand where you're coming from, of course.
Last I checked, antisocial behaviour wasn't a crime.
Sergeant Little nods, and he says, of course, but... Listen, Mr. Cauldron, Russell, the fact of the matter is, I can tell you a couple of things about this case. My colleague yesterday was maybe a little too hasty as regards the secrecy of this matter. Would it surprise you to learn that Ian died around lunchtime on July 27th of this year?
Yes. Well, I knew it was in the last few weeks. His neighbour said so.
But you didn't know the exact date?
No.
I'm going to ask for another roll.
Is there a deception check in this game?
Not as such. I think rapport, although I could see an argument for focus if you really wanted to make it. But this is another recovery test.
Cool.
I'm going to be including 2d8. I'm going to be including your d6 for hunger. I'm going to be including your d10 for police suspicion. And I'm going to be including Sergeant Little's wits, which is a d6.
Oh, I got the slightly less attentive one.
Aha, your luck is starting to turn. I have a 12 total, and I have an opportunity, which is one of my wands.
Okay.
You can spend a plot point to step down one of your complications straight away.
I certainly will.
Would you like to do that?
Yes, I'll give you one of my juicy plot points.
And what are you stepping down?
I'm stepping down this police suspicion.
You're not stepping down hunger?
No.
Okay.
No.
You find some gum underneath the table.
Just keeping me sustained. Just a little bit of sugar.
Great, so that immediately goes down to D8, which has a couple of knock-on effects. The big one is now your effect die only needs to be bigger than a D8 in order to completely eliminate this police suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if you can do it.
I suppose I'm using my wits, which is a D10.
Yes.
So I could get away with that. I'm hoping for focus with a D8. This is a sustained attempt for me, for him not to read me.
Yes.
I'm not trying to make him like me. I just want him to leave me alone.
And you're also not really putting, like, a particular viewpoint forward.
No.
You're simply trying to bluff. You're trying to poker face this,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't trust these police. They don't have my best interests at heart. Sharing information with them isn't where I'm going.
But he's such a nice guy.
Sure, he's lovely in a way. If you are scared of him. Speed reading isn't going to help me here.
So, if you want... Is that just 3 dice?
Yes.
So if you want to remember before you roll, you can spend a plot point to include another die from another trait. So you could include your cunning, for example.
How much do I have to be?
12.
12. Yes, I'll use another plot point to include... Yeah, my cunning seems good. I'm being a bit cheeky. I have 12 exactly. I'm going to use a plot point.
That's another plot point if you want to make it a success. Yeah,
I'm going to make that a success.
Okay.
By adding my other D8, but it does mean I've got a D10 effect die.
Very nice. Any hitches?
No hitches at all.
Ooh, lovely. So what's your total there?
Just 14.
14. 14 is a success with a D10 effect die. Means that you completely clear police suspicion.
They can leave me alone now.
You may well hope so. Certainly something in Sergeant Little's expression seems to change as you look him in the eye and tell him this is the first you're hearing of this date of the death. And he says, and do you have any idea exactly where the incident occurred?
No idea. I'd heard it was a traffic accident of some kind.
Yes, it was just on the waterfront, actually, in front of the Point Cafe. You can tell he's, like, searching your face for expressions as he says these things.
Mm.
He's not being particularly subtle about it.
My eyes kind of go a little distant, but then say, that's just opposite the pier?
Roughly.
It might not surprise you to note that I'm going to keep asking questions about this. Ian was important to me. And if this as it appears to be, is a matter of some suspicion, then all the more reason for me to ask around.
He looks down at the recorder. Do you have anything more you want to tell us, Mr. Cauldron?
No.
He reaches out and stops the recording. And he says, would you excuse me just one more moment? Indeed, it is probably just 2 minutes later that he comes back in with Inspector Avery, who says, Mr. Cauldron, we apologized for the misunderstanding here. You are free to go. You have a good morning.
Thank you very much, Inspector Avery.
And he holds the door open. You head out of the police station.
Russell walks across the road, around the corner, plants his back against a wall and just, like, has a panic attack in the middle of the street.
You sink down to the ground there, sort of balled up ever so slightly, breathing heavily, trying to keep control of you know, your breathing and your state as best as you can.
Fists are balled, jaws clenched, and just breathing incredibly heavily, shaking as if submerged in seawater.
When you hear a voice from above you say, first time.
I look up.
Morgan. The man who you saw in what you thought was Ian's house. Kind of ratty faced, short brown hair, thin beard. Skinny, very skinny. It's standing, towering over you while you're here, kind of crouched on the street in this little side road. His arms are folded. His expression is sour, but there is a note of sympathy in his eyes.
I stand up immediately. The fuck do you want now? Now you want to talk.
He steps back and holds up his hand. He says, hey, sorry, I'm just seeing if you were okay. I saw you go in there.
I got arrested.
Yeah. He's now standing at a little bit of a distance from you as you've sort of, like, stood up. You are a little taller than him, and he, like, is now looking up into your eyes. What did they want?
I was asking questions because I didn't get any information because you wouldn't talk to me. And now I've got a criminal record because I had to ask the questions that I guess people don't want me to be asking around here.
His face twists and he says, well, hang on, that's not fair. Just because I didn't talk to you, that doesn't mean it's my fault for getting arrested.
I don't know anyone here. I've just had to wander into a police station to find out why the person you live with, Ian, is dead.
He turns away from you, looks out to the east, towards the sea. And he gestures with his head, just a slight tilt, and begins walking along the beachfront.
I follow.
He opens and closes his mouth a couple of times, looking for the right words. And he says, you're Russell.
Yeah.
Why'd you come?
That's between me and Ian.
Yeah. Yeah, I know why you came. Well, you were too late months ago, all right?
Why are you talking to me? You come to make this more difficult, is it?
No. Because I saw you on the street, coming out of the police station, and having some kind of episode, and I thought I would come over and be nice. Show some sympathy. You're not the only one who doesn't know anybody here. I've lived here for months and I don't know a damn person.
You're new to Kingstone too.
He tilts his head. Pretty new. February.
How did you meet Ian?
He looks a little suspicious and he kind of stops at one of the railings and he says, just Same social circles?
His suspicion is mirrored in Russell's eyes.
The two of you just, like, eyeing each other. It's very clear that, like, you have some understanding, but the foundation of that understanding is smothered by suspicion.
Listen, I came here to apologise.
He scoffs.
Ian was important to me, and I didn't want to leave things unsaid. However you were with Ian is none of my business. But I am going to be asking questions. Because right now nothing makes sense.
He half turns to face you. What doesn't make sense?
I don't know where he is. I don't know how he died. I don't know why he came here in the first place.
He came to be with me.
Why did you come here?
I had work. He did too, in the end. That's all. We wanted to get out of the city. Wanted somewhere small. Somewhere out of the way. He was always looking over his shoulder.
That doesn't sound like him.
Maybe you didn't. And he stops himself from saying something mean. And he says, it was an accident. Nobody knows who did it. I wasn't there. I don't know anyone who was, but nobody said anything to the police. And just the sound of a car screeching along the waterfront. And then it drove off. Nobody saw a plate. Nothing. Just him in the middle of the road.
In the middle of lunchtime. Outside a cafe. Nobody saw anything. You don't find that strange?
This place. I don't know what it is about it, but you've already seen too many questions. They get you in trouble. Everyone knows everyone. If the word of your arrest hasn't spread already, give it a couple days, and nobody's going to want to say a word to you. Trust me. They all think I'm a weirdo who sleeps in his bathtub.
Why do they think that?
He makes sort of a, like, bats away the air with his hand and shrugs and says, because I sleep in my bathtub.
Alright, so they got part of that right then.
Somebody saw through a window, God knows what they were even looking at, one of my neighbours. They just looked in and anyway, that's the rumour about me now. That's why everyone thinks I'm weird, not least, well, you can imagine what they said about me and Ian.
Yeah, well, that's not easy. I'm sorry for your loss.
He nods and says, yeah, me too.
If you'll show me where he is, then I'll say goodbye, but I've never been good at unanswered questions.
Yeah, me neither. And he looks up at you and gives the first thing that resembles a smile. And you feel a very light drizzle from the clouds above. As he says, do you need some help?
Thank you for listening. For more information, visit tide.show.